You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bernard Madoff was sentenced to the maximum sentence this morning in federal district court in Manhattan, 150 years in prison for conducting the largest Ponzi scheme in history. It could involve as much as $65 billion. Andy Borowitz of the award-winning website BorowitzReport.com has some advice for Mr. Madoff, who is facing this incredible prison term, in his latest book called Who Moved My Soap? The CEO's Guide to Surviving Prison, the Bernie Madoff edition, published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very pleased that it's brought Andy Borowitz back to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. What a day it's been.
You just came from the court?
I've had a busy day. I was down there at the courthouse at 8 o'clock this morning with the sort of media circus. I didn't realize there were that many reporters who weren't currently covering the Michael Jackson story. I don't know where these guys came from. I guess there's a deeper bench in journalism than any of us suspected. But they were all there waiting for the word on Bernie. And I've got to say, this is one of those few kind of feel-good stories out there. I mean, the Madoff story is a horrible story, but this is the best we could have hoped for.
Well, what do you think of Bernie Madoff's lawyer, Ira Lee Sorkin, who argued that 12 years would be adequate sentence for his crimes?
Well, yeah, that was, Bernie's, I guess, 71 now. And so 12 years. He was saying that his life expectancy was 13 more years. So I don't know exactly what he meant by that. It's like he was going to serve 12 and then have 1 year just to kind of have fun, live it up. I don't know. I thought that was being, shall we say, optimistic. And it turned out, I mean, they really gave Bernie the absolute maximum. He's going to be serving time until, I did the calculation, the year 2159. So by then, his cellmate will be like a robot or an alien, probably.
But this doesn't really end all the legal hassles because there's a lot of talk about compensation. What do you make of the fact that investors have been fighting over who should get what, depending on whether they invested directly or through feeder funds?
Yeah, well, you know, this is going to be a big mess. I mean, there are people. I mean, one of the problems, and you know, we talked about this the last time on April Fool's Day when we met in that historic moment. You know, one of the things that's
it was historic.
But one of the things that's sort of shocking about the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme is how long it lasted. I mean, this thing lasted decades, and you know, there are some people. I hate to bring this up because I'm sure. Some of them might even be in our listening audience. There's some people who invested in this fund, let's say 20 years ago, and got out 10 years ago, who did just fine. I mean, who made 10% a year. And I don't know how they're feeling about all this. I mean, they're not villains in this, but they were beneficiaries. I don't know where the money is. I don't know how they're going to find it. I feel, terrible for the victims of this, which is, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I did the book. I just thought, you know, laughter at this point is probably better than crying, which is what everybody's been doing.
Well, do you have any advice for Mr. Madoff's wife, Ruth? Do you think she'll wind up in prison too? And do you think that serving time is any better for a woman than for a man?
Well, I don't really want to guess about Ruth's involvement or not. I mean, who knows? There are a lot of corporate CEOs who never speak to their wives. So maybe Ruth never knew anything about this, you know, if Bernie was in that category. But I think they're going to be looking into what Ruth knew or might have known, what the kids knew. I mean, it's going to be, this is not the end of the story.
Do you think this is the golden age of Ponzi schemes? Because there's this other big one, not as big as the Madoff, but it involves Robert Allen Stanford, who I think he's still on the run, isn't he?
No. Oh, Stanford, they got. Oh, Stanford. They Stanford has surrendered.
Because I wondered if I was the only person who didn't come up with the idea of conducting a Ponzi scheme over the past couple of years.
Yeah, it's one of those things that now, Leonard, I think you're too late. Like, I think if you do it now, it would be
sort of— People are going to get suspicious.
Yeah, it would be sort of like my telling my wife this week that I want to hike the Appalachian Trail. You know, it's just like, it's one of those things you're a day late, a dollar short, you know? So, I think it's too, if Ponzi schemes were the thing, you know, it's sort of like coming up with a great .com scam in 2001, you know?
Now, even if you tell your wife that the Appalachian Trail is in Argentina?
I think just hiking the Appalachian Trail has become just an amazing euphemism now. It's sort of like, honey,
Now, Bernie Madoff has been in jail since March awaiting his sentencing. Have you heard about how he's been faring?
Well, you know, this actually is what inspired this new edition of Who Moved My Soap, because I was reading, and this I'm not, I know I say a lot of falsehoods when I'm on your show usually, so I have to actually mark this as actually a true thing that I'm saying. I was reading the New York Post, where I get a lot of my news. It was in April, and there was a story there called Jail for Dummies. And the story said that some of Bernie's relatives were concerned about how he would fare in prison. And so they were looking for some kind of a guide to help him. And I just thought, you know, I am a service journalist. Well, I mean, I'm a fake journalist, but I'm a fake service journalist. I could probably come up with something. So I don't know how he's done, you know, to this date. One of the reasons I was there at the courthouse today was I was hoping to be able to slip him a copy of the book, because God knows he has time to read it now. I mean, he can read this many, many times.
But he's been at Rikers or someplace like that, I imagine. Now he's going to a federal penitentiary, and the rules change there.
They do.
And he's unlikely to be sentenced to one of those so-called country club prisons.
No, he's going to do a hard time. They would never get away with sending him off to some place where there's, you know, a squash court and stuff like that. I think he's going to do some hard time. And, you know, I think things could get dicey. I've never been on the inside. By the way, that's prison terminology. Mm-hmm. I'm steeped in the subject matter. I've never been on the inside. I've never done hard time. But I have heard that there are some very tough, very mean Palm Beach gangs in the prison. I've heard of a gang called the Gefilte Kings, for example. Bernie is going to have to watch his back. That could be tricky.
Well, maybe he can offer them investment tips, which would be truer insider trading.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't really thought of that. I thought I had done every obvious pun about prison, and there you go, Leonard.
Here I am.
There was one I didn't pick up. Yeah, you know, I thought about it, and one of the messages of the book is that, you know, prison, you know, if you're a CEO in prison, this is really a new chapter in your business career. It's not the end. And if you think about, like, what you need to set up a Ponzi scheme, a lot of the ingredients are there in prison, because in order to do a Ponzi scheme, you have to have a constant influx of new unsuspecting investors. And, of course, prisoners are constantly being, you know, processed into the facility. And one thing is, if Bernie is in a prison that has a lot of other CEOs, they could be perfect for a Ponzi scheme, because I don't know if you've noticed this, but every time a CEO is on trial, he says he has absolutely no idea what was going on in his company. It's like it was all like Ken Lay, you know, it was all happening around him. That to me sounds like an easy mark, somebody who's totally oblivious to everything. So I think Bernie could maybe start it all over again. And he has 150 years to compound interest, which could be amazing.
Well, let's talk about some of the people he's likely to meet in prison. What should he do to make friends with his cellmate and his fellow prisoners?
Well, you know, I think it's tricky. You know, I don't know who his cellmate will be. I mean, when he was, I guess he was at the detention center, I think the downtown detention center in Manhattan, the one on White Street.
What they used to call the Tombs?
Yeah, the Tombs. I think that's where he was, where I believe he was sharing a cell, I believe, with a Somali pirate. That's what I had heard. And I think he got into singing Somali sea chanties and things like that. You just have to do, you know, you have to do what you need to do. You have to blend in. I mean, Bernie was very good in Palm Beach at blending in the country club setting. Everybody thought it's you know, it's an amazing thing. He's just such a nice guy and so modest. So I think he should take his cue from whoever he's with. If he's sharing a cell, for example, with O.J. Simpson, you know, he's got to say, you know, you were totally framed. You know, the Colombian drug lords did it. You know, when we get out of here, we're going to look for the real killers. I mean, I think he just has to make nice with who he's with.
My guess is Andy Borowitz, whose work appears regularly in The New Yorker and, of course, on his award-winning website, borowitzreport.com. His book, Who Moved My Soap, has just been updated with a new Bernie Madoff edition, The CEO's Guide to Surviving in Prison, made, he points out, from 100% shredded paper, compact design, survives most strip searches, and it can also be used as a weapon.
Yeah, it's a sharp edge. There's a sharp edge to it.
The book is published by Simon & Schuster paperback. Well, he'll have to figure out ways to get along with his fellow prisoners, but what about the guards? What are your recommendations for getting on a guard's good side?
Oh dear. You know, I really think that he's got his work cut out for him there. I mean, I think the best bet for Bernie is to, you know, sort of lay low the first few weeks and then eventually say to the guards, I have the investment opportunity of a lifetime and I'm not going to let the guards in cell block B into it, but the guards in cell block C, because I know you. You see, that's the thing about Bernie that people are saying, how did he get away with this? But what Bernie did, which was so shrewd, is that most con men try to sort of lure you in with sort of a hard sell. And Bernie was always acting like it was very exclusive, like you were lucky to be with Bernie. So I think if he's very standoffish with the guards, but then say, look, I can hook you up.
But, you know, one of the people who spoke in court today about how he was hurt by Madoff was a corrections officer. So he might already be on the bad side of the guards.
How did that go down? You know, it's funny because I was, for some reason, the judge did not let me into the courtroom. So I was not actually on the, I wasn't really there at the moment where that, what did that gentleman say, the corrections officer?
I don't know.
But is this a guy who's been dealing with Bernie?
He was one of the people who lost money.
Oh, my
and
God.
And
oh,
I would I think see. That he talks to other guards. And then there's that other problem. I'd imagine that if you're used to being the boss of a company, you might have problems with authority. You know, do CEOs feel comfortable taking direction from guards who have never had the kind of money they've had, have probably never worn cufflinks to a major gala?
You know,
don't own their own tuxedos?
You know, this is actually... I deal with this so much in the book, just the problem of adaptation that a CEO has when he goes to prison. I have tried to make this book, you know, it's in the vein of other self-help business books. And I've, like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell has written many, like, for example, Blink. This is kind of like Clink. It's trying to show people how they have to change their mindset. I've tried to say to the CEOs who read this book, you know, you're really just trading one gated community for another. And keep that mindset. You're not really a loser. But they have to be careful. You know, CEOs, you're absolutely right. They're used to having, you know, a corporate dining room. They're not used to sharing, you know, eating facilities with all these other people. In the book, there is actually very helpful, a Zagat guide to prison food, because there's a huge variety of quality from one prison to the next.
But they're going to have other kinds of problems. Ken Lay, for example, he had that $6,000 shower curtain and the $15,000 umbrella stand.
I have to correct you. The shower curtain was actually Dennis Kozlowski of Tyco. He was actually my favorite of the disgraced CEOs because he was the only one who really lived like a rapper. He was like, I called him K-Dog. You know, $6,000...
I've always wondered, my shower curtain is plastic. How much money can you get for a shower curtain? What does $6,000 buy you?
You know what? I got to say, you know, that whole thing about the $6,000 shower curtain, everybody had the same response that you did. But you know what? When you're in prison, you would totally pay $6,000 for a shower curtain. I mean, it would be worth every penny of that. So Just to have a shower curtain. I mean, that is, I think, besides cigarettes, that is like the biggest thing in the black market of prisons is, you know, can you hook me up with a shower curtain?
My guest is Andy Borowitz. His book, Who Moved My Soap? The CEO's Guide to Surviving in Prison, has just been updated with the Bernie Madoff edition. And it is published by Simon & Schuster paperback, and I gather it's already number 25 on the Amazon list.
It is.
We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Andy Borowitz, who writes regularly for The New Yorker, also has his award-winning website, borowitzreport.com, and was the first ever winner of the National Press Club's Award for Humor. And his latest book is called Who Moved My Soap? The CEO's Guide to Surviving in Prison, published by Simon & Schuster in an updated paperback, because this one is now the Bernie Madoff edition. And I don't understand that humor part.
Because I'm just telling the truth.
Now, what you have something around your neck. What is that?
This is, this is going to be a great fashion accessory. This is a Who Moved My Soap, Bernie Madoff soap on a rope. And we were handing these out at the courthouse today to the media throng That's kind of a cliche, right? Media throng.
There are a lot of cliches. There are a lot of cliches. But it's okay.
It's okay. This is a really snazzy. It's almost like kind of a gangsta medallion. It's got Bernie behind bars on it, and it says "Who moved my soap?" And you know, we were trying hard to get one of these to Bernie because I just thought this would be a kind of a nice memento for him to have behind bars. But again, my access to Madoff this morning was extremely limited.
And so was the press's, obviously, the rest of the press.
Yeah.
I wonder who's allowed in the courtroom other than the victims.
Well, I guess how many 11 victims got a chance to speak? I was really thinking that this would it might go on a little bit longer than it was sort of like, man, they were done and done. I mean, that judge kind of...
I think his mind was made up.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to go 75 years or something, split the difference.
Yeah, 80, I figured it was 81 was halfway, but no, 150, he got the full Monty.
Now, you have some feng shui recommendations for prison cells. Are many CEOs even familiar with feng shui?
Well, you know, feng shui became, I think, a big thing in American companies in the 80s. You would bring in, because remember, in the 80s, we were so infatuated in American business with the Japanese, because the Japanese companies were ruling the world, companies like Sony and Mitsubishi and all those companies. So
that's before the Japanese economy went down the tubes.
Exactly. But you know, in America, we always like to chase whatever we think is the thing of the moment. But one thing that, you know, was a big deal was this Asian science, feng shui, where you would design your living space or your workspace to maximize qi. I think that's the term, which is just it's very important to have maximum qi. And I'm sure Bernie Madoff, who apparently was very particular about his surroundings, I guess you have to have the maximum qi to have a really successful Ponzi scheme.
Go ahead.
But anyway, it does, you know, there's a whole chapter in the book about how to use feng shui to improve your prison setting.
Well, feng shui is actually Chinese, and
that's
qi
right.
Energy is a major concern
right.
within the certain Chinese thinking.
Right.
And maybe that, considering some of the scandals we've seen from China, maybe that makes more sense for someone like Bernie Madoff.
Right. Well, there is that. I mean, I think that, you know, in terms of designing your prison cell, some of the same concerns that you would have as a CEO are the same. You obviously want the prestigious corner cell, if you can get that. But the most important thing, actually, in prison from a feng shui point of view is to position your bunk so that you are facing out at all times. Your back is never to the bars. You really want to make sure you see what's coming at you, as Sarah Palin would say.
You don't have to pack any clothes for prison, do you?
I mean, how
does a CEO pack for prison?
Well, there's a whole chapter in here called Packing for the Pokey. And, you know, the fact is, you really can't bring very much in there because there is sort of a I'm not going to mince words. It's sort of a body cavity search that you go through when you're first inducted. So he can't bring very much. The main thing, if you can sneak it in, would be cigarettes. Now, I don't know if Bernie is a smoker, but cigarettes are the currency of prison. That is like what, you know, credit default swaps are, you know, to the investment banker. That's the means of exchange. So if there's any way that Bernie can sneak some in, and I don't know where he would sneak them in, but if he can get those in, that would be very, very helpful.
But you also suggest nicotine gum might even be a better thing to bring in.
That's right, because of the constant smoking. Smoking is one of the main activities that goes on in prison. There's not a lot to do, clearly, but smoking, acquiring cigarettes, trading cigarettes for other things, and smoking cigarettes, those are really the kind of growth industries in prison. And so a really smart CEO would realize that nicotine gum is going to be way more valuable than cigarettes. Everybody's doing cigarettes. So if there's any way that Bernie can get some nicotine gum in there, he'd be well. It's really, you know, as I'm telling you this, Leonard, it sort of saddens me that I didn't get a good 10 minutes with Bernie because I think that would have been so helpful. I'm really hoping that somebody somewhere will get him. Maybe Ruth will bake a cake and it'll have this book in it, because I think this would just – he's got a long time to sort this out.
Do you have any other reading recommendations for him?
Well, you know, there are a lot of – you know, stirring things you can read. I think The Shawshank Redemption is a good one. I would recommend that. I think don't read any of the Malcolm Gladwell books. I just think that those, you know, I think he's gotten enough play, quite frankly. I just think that in general, there aren't what we really need right now, and I think there's a niche that's missing, is we could use a glossy magazine like Forbes or Fortune for CEOs behind bars, because this is just the quickest growing component of the prison population. It seems like Condé Nast or one of these companies should do a glossy magazine for them.
Well, he could also read Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude.
Well, they're going to do an update of that called 150 Years of Solitude, which will be coming out soon, as soon as I can register that title, actually.
Do you think that going to prison can actually boost someone's career reputation? I mean, aren't there some skills like bribery that are useful for corporate leaders inside and outside prison? I was thinking about that guy, the recent guy who threw his son's bar mitzvah in prison. I would assume that involved a certain amount of bribery.
Well, you know, it's like, again, in the rap world, you know, you get a certain amount of, dare I say, props, maybe some swagger, I think is another term that's sometimes used as a result of any kind of interaction with law enforcement. So I think, unfortunately, Leonard, in order to put that to use, you eventually have to get out of prison. And I think that's the catch for Bernie. I think that, you know, in a way, these issues are so serious. I really think that the business schools, you know, Harvard Business School, Wharton, they should really teach a class for future CEOs about how to deal with prison life. Because I've been to some of these business schools and I've spoken to them and I've looked at their curriculum. The problem with business schools is they're only teaching their students how to get into prison. They're not doing anything. Once you're there, the alumni office stops calling. You're just left high and dry. And I really think, you know, this is a moment. I know we're all sort of reveling in the fact that Bernie is going down, and that's something we should all, you know, justice was done. But let's look to the future and see how can we improve the education for those CEOs who will eventually be in Bernie's shoes.
My guest is Andy Borowitz, who moved my soap, The CEO's Guide to Surviving in Prison, has just been updated with a new Bernie Madoff edition published by Simon & Schuster, paperback. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, corporate jargon can be difficult to understand, so clearly many CEOs have a gift of translating impenetrable language, and the business schools teach that sort of thing. But what about prison slang? Is corporate jargon anything like prison slang?
Well, it's as difficult to learn. I actually did an entire chapter here, which is a corporate speak prison slang glossary. And I'm trying to think if I can think of some examples. Unfortunately, most of this is sort of not appropriate for a family, mm-hmm. and I consider this a family radio show.
Flipping the pad is okay.
Now that's an interesting term. Let me just see how this is defined here. Let me just find this. Flipping the pad, that has two meanings. Flipping the pad can either mean turning over your mattress mm-hmm. in the prison cell. It can also mean selling your Park Avenue apartment to pay for your legal defense. That's another term that maybe Bernie uses. Here's an expression, for example. This is a term you might say to somebody: "You put me on Front Street, punk." Okay, you might say that. The definition of that is: "You may have unintentionally divulged sensitive information, much to my detriment." So that's a term. Here's another one. It's you got a freak bone a mile long, and that means you excel at thinking outside the box. So it's, you know, it's just a question of learning the language that's going to be helpful to you on the inside.
But I would think there's a lot of similarities. For example, in prison, you have snitches. In mm-hmm. the corporate world, you have whistleblowers.
Exactly. Well, you know, but there's a difference. You know, snitches, you know, in prison are really looked down upon, and whistleblowers in the corporate world eventually get book deals. So it's a little bit of a different thing. I mean, obviously, in corporate America, They despise snitches, but we do have, you know, we do have a vaunted role for them as well.
A listener, Paul, calls to say that there is, in fact, a glossy prison magazine.
What is it called?
I don't know.
Paul, don't tease us like that.
Get back to us with that, okay?
There's a glossy prison magazine. You know, this is what I'm saying, like, about Ponzi schemes, Leonard. All the good ideas have already been done, you know? It's unbelievable.
Well, you mentioned a Zagat for prison food. Now, prison food, from by reputation, could be pretty bad. How can someone who is used to eating at a 4-star restaurant pretty much every night or having a personal chef make an adjustment to the kind of food? Many people noted that Martha Stewart lost weight in prison, and she went to prison, by the way, I thought unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
For, I think something that involved $28,000 and didn't hurt anybody. In this case, Bernie Madoff is up to $65 billion, and it hurt a lot of people. But what about the food that they serve in prison?
Well, it's not great. I mean, there's no – I'm really not going to mince words about it. I mean, you know, there is a whole chapter in this book, which is this Zagat guide of prison food. And we go through Marion, which is Marion, Illinois, Leavenworth, Butner, which is in Butner, North Carolina, Lompoc, of course.
Any of them have better food than others?
Well, that's what this chapter seems to indicate. You know, they're like in the style of Zagat guides. All of these reviews are from actual customers. They're all from people who've been in prison. So, you know, like, and they're all in quotes. Like, we quote, you know, it's like, quote, "You won't want to be paroled," end quote, after tasting the sumptuous meals at this old Heartland favorite, which is Leavenworth. You know, so it's good stuff. The one thing that you don't get in the Zagat guide, you know, on the outside always has things like people complain about how expensive it is. And that's the one thing that you don't have here.
True.
People are always saying, bring your wallet. You know, they have that, but you don't have that problem in prison. So that's one good thing.
The magazine, I am informed, is called Prison Life.
Of course it's called it.
In the case of Bernie Madoff, we're talking about prison for life.
But, you know, think about it. This is like, you know, fugitive financiers are, you know, America's leading export to the world right now. You know, we've got this Alan Stanford guy who I guess has just turned himself in. You've got Madoff. You've got any number of crooks that we don't even know about who would be great subscribers for something like Prison Life. You know, here's one of the ironies. When the original version of Who Moved My Soap came out, that was the week that Martha Stewart was indicted. And I was down at the same courthouse in Lower Manhattan for the arraignment of Sam Waxel, who was the CEO of ImClone, which she was accused of doing insider trading involving those shares. And I remember hearing all the cable news people saying, well, America's had enough. We're fed up. We're going to tighten all the regulations. This kind of financial chicanery is never happening again. And at that time, I'm pretty sure Bernie Madoff was chairman of the NASDAQ. So he was the most respected, most trusted guy on the street. So as we're down there again today and it's a media circus, I'm just wondering who is going to turn out to be the next crook. You know?
Well, do you think it's partly because once they're put in prison, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind? It's hard to remember who Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay are and what their crimes were.
Right.
Some of them are more colorful, like Marcus Schrenker, the Indiana businessman who was under investigation for his financial dealings, and he faked his own death in a plane crash.
Well, and then there was that guy who I think was, you know, is going to go on trial, so Samuel Israel. I mean, he was the guy who recently faked a suicide. I mean, yeah, these guys, they can be quite colorful. I think one of the problems we have, though, is that as a society, if I may be serious for a moment, as a society, we have a short attention span, and we are always looking for the next bubble to invest in. And so we always think, well, this new paradigm isn't going to be like the last one, and we'll all be fine. Now, in fairness to the investors who got swindled by Bernie, these were not get-rich-quick investors. I mean, they were really trusting their money on the basis of a long-term gain that would be sustainable. And so that's what makes their losses even more tragic, because they weren't doing anything crazy or opportunistic.
But I have listeners who write in whenever we talk about Madoff who say that since the gains were so high and that they didn't fluctuate, that anybody who reads the newspaper should have been suspicious.
Right, right.
Well, and maybe they were thinking that Bernie Madoff had insider information and was able to get away with stuff.
Right.
But, you know, do you, then aren't you aiding and abetting a criminal?
Right. It's a tricky thing. You know, we wonder about who we can trust in our society, and other than me, I don't know really who people should trust. To tell you the truth, I'm reliably incorrect about everything. But other than that, I don't really know.
Derek from Manhattan says the magazine is called Feds, and you can buy it anywhere in Manhattan. So either there are two magazines, or it's Feds Prison Life, or something like that. But
I want to remind our readers what we're trying to promote today. It's actually my book, but these magazines sound fantastic.
Well, people can read two different things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Meanwhile, yours is 25 on Amazon. The Amazon.com list, and it's called Who Moved My Soap? The CEO's Guide to Surviving Prison. This is the new Bernie Madoff edition, updated. How much was changed?
Well, I think we have a very interesting sort of foreword to the book, because the whole thrust of the book now is that this is a book being narrated by Bernie Madoff's cellmate. As usual, I have sort of reported the news before it's happened, which is, sort of my MO. But this is basically, it's got it's got more Madoff than ever. And that would be a fair assessment of the book. Now with more Madoff.
There are two magazines, I'm informed. But just one other thing. I wonder what you think about Madoff's lawyer's statement, Ira Lee Sorkin's statement, that vengeance is not the goal of punishment.
Oh, I disagree. We do want revenge on this guy, and my slogan is, revenge is a dish best served in paperback. So that's
from Simon and Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us. Meanwhile, we'll probably be reading updates on your
BorowitzReport.com, and also Twitter. Twitter is on fire right now. If you want to sign up and follow me, my username is Borowitz Report. I have new followers every day. I spend most of my day tweeting now. It's sad, but that's what I do.
Well, I've been tweet having you on the show.
On that note.